The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Please keep your arms and legs inside the car at all times.
This is your final warning.
Now, here's your host, Mr. Thrill Ride himself, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. As you know, we're talking to Katie Hopkins today. We love her, and we'll continue talking to her right after this segment. In the meantime, we've just got a couple of kooky announcements. Albin, Chris, you got anything kooky? Actually, this is not kooky. We are getting in touch with the folks at one of our sponsors. I think you've heard of them, Honor Bound Coffee. And I'm trying to find out if there's a way for people to be able to get Honor Bound Coffee mugs. This is like now my favorite mug. You should probably be reminded, if you're listening to this program, before we get back to Katie Hopkins, that Honor Bound Coffee is not just a sponsor of this program, but they give all of their profits to helping military families. I just find that so astounding that literally, and I don't know if this happens to you, Albin or Chris, but when I drink the coffee in the morning, I feel a little happy thinking about that.
Well, I hear bugles playing. Bum, 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 bum. No?
But I mean, it just amazes me. Look, folks, go to honorboundcoffee.com, check it out. But they give 100% of their profits to helping military families. So, you know, if you're inclined to drink coffee, let me recommend that. Actually, Albin and Chris, did you know that we are when we talk about free speech, right? I think the whole Salem Radio Network is so annoyed at the censorship of Dennis Prager's film, yes, No Safe Spaces, that we want to continually remind people to go to nosafespaces.com. It's a great film on free speech. And actually, what made me think of it just now is the new Woody Allen book. Have you guys heard about this?
No, yeah. I haven't.
Yeah, sure.
Chris, what have you heard about it? Anything good, bad?
Well, they were going to publish it, and I felt like a lot of people were excited to read it, to get his story. And then the publishers kind of they canceled it. Employees for the publishing house, I guess, didn't know about it, or some of them didn't know about it and felt offended, and they did a walkout.
Actually, here's my version of the story. I've been reading Woody Allen's writing because he has a number of collections of humor pieces, which I've modeled my own humor pieces on, the ones that I published in The Atlantic or The New York Times Magazine or whatever. And they are genuinely brilliant. And his way with prose is spectacular. I mean, it's absolutely spectacular. So when I heard that he was writing a memoir, an autobiography, I thought, this has to be a joke. Really? He's really doing this? And of course, there are many people right now under the impression that he's a child molester. Now, I have to be very clear. Dwight Garner in the New York Times this Sunday reviewed the book, and he goes out of his way in the beginning of the review to explain where he comes out on this. And he comes out about where I do, right? In other words, Woody Allen, like almost everybody in Hollywood, they do what they like. And some of that is really bad. What he did, obviously, was he started a sexual relationship with a 21-year-old who happened to be the adopted daughter of his longtime girlfriend, Mia Farrow. Horrific stuff. Now, on the upside of that story, they've been married for over 20 years. So it obviously was not a fling. And I've seen them in public a number of times. I've met both of them in public. And I guess, the real question is, are these allegations of his molesting the 7-year-old girl true? And it is my considered opinion that they're not true for many, many reasons, which, you know, I guess I could go into now, but people aren't tuning into this program to hear about this stuff. But the point is that if I thought that they were true, I would not be cavalier about the whole thing. But I am convinced that they're not true. And I think it's very important that we be careful, convicting people in the court of public opinion. So people don't like what he did with Sun Yi, but it's a whole order, a different order of bad if, he molested in any way a young girl. But I'm absolutely, totally convinced he did not. Okay, so getting that out of the way, Dwight Garner goes on to review the book. It's called Apropos of Nothing. And it sounds like something that I know I want to read. I cannot wait to read it because he really is a great writer. Forget about the films. His fiction is very good. I'm sorry. His humor pieces.
Right.
His prose is very, very good. But in it, he also gets into, I guess, a lot of the Sturm und Drang with Mia Farrow, which I'm shocked that he goes there, so to speak. But he evidently gets into that, and I have heard from, friends like Dick Cavett and others who are close to the situation, that corroborate Woody's version of this. So it's at least interesting. And I just thought I would mention that I'm utterly convinced he did not do that with the 7-year-old girl. And if I even were questioning it, I would take a different angle. I would not be talking about him, in this kind of a way.
And I don't know if you've written publicly about it, but I've read what you've discovered or, what your opinion is on that. And I was like, after reading it, I was like convinced. Yeah, that's, you got it. You nailed it. He's,
Well, I think that what people are doing is, it's one thing. First of all, you have to look at the context of, the 60s and 70s and 80s, everybody's cracking jokes. Like old men would crack jokes about, that they'd find this 18-year-old attractive. I think, W.C. Fields, there was a joke that he loves children, especially, girls around 16 or something, like some horrible thing like that. So Woody Allen used to be interested in younger women. And obviously Sun Yi was much younger than him. But the whole order, different order when you go down to 7 years old and groping her and this and that. But I think the here's the issue. When people who do stuff like that, if they're that sick, there's more than one incident. And anyway, there's a lot more to it. I don't mean to be so negative. We're going to go back to our conversation with Katie Hopkins. We cannot forget to mention haircuts. Guys, how do we get a haircut during this quarantine? I'm having real trouble.
I know. It's so bad for me that I'm starting to regrow hair. That's how bad it is.
My wig is at the cleaners, and man, do I wish I had that wig back. It's incredible.
I'm hoping the comb over comes back because I'm going to get there pretty soon.
But it is kind of weird. Like you think, we don't know how long this is going to go on. I'm starting to have trouble with my hair. It's not doing what it's supposed to do. This is when I would get a haircut, and it's causing some real trouble, this darn pandemic. Chris, you just don't care, do you?
He's on mute.
He doesn't care. He's on mute.
Sorry about that. Yeah, no, I was saying there's some techniques online where you can use matches and fire to cut your hair. It's very quick.
No, for real.
People do it. I've seen it.
But it's really a weird thing. I don't know what we're gonna do. And my my roots are starting to show. That's the really scary thing.
By the way, my wife is running around the bunker here making a sandwich. So if you hear any noises in the kitchen.
You really do have a wonderfully old-fashioned marriage. Your wife's running around making sandwiches.
Yeah, and she sometimes she chases me around, you know, wearing an apron, chasing me around the house with a roller pin. You get back here, young man.
Oh, unbelievable. All right, we're gonna go back. We're going to be talking to Katie Hopkins in a couple of seconds. We should not forget to remind you also, actually, if anybody this week goes to MetaxasTalk.com and gives anything to Food for the Poor, okay, that's officially over. But if you give this week, you'll get credit for it. They will be delighted. We will be delighted. So I want it to be very clear if you go to MetaxasTalk.com, and you will be entered in the contest for this week's grand prize winner. So that's not yet over. That won't be over till the end of this week. When it is over, we will pick our final grand prize winner. Someone will get to come visit us in the studio with all their friends and family and whoever you want, and you'll get tons of signed books. We have a lot of fun with this. So anyway, and everybody who gives $100, you get signed up to Metaxas Super. We always forget to mention that. Commercial-free versions of this program. So anyway, we'll be right back with the great Katie Hopkins. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Hey there, folks. Welcome back. In the previous segment, of course, I was talking about Woody Allen. Katie was not here for that. But we're back with Katie Hopkins. She is in the UK, although who's to say? Because the flag behind her, look at that. It's so wonderful. And Katie, I thought you were a nationalist. And here you are actually binational in your affections.
Of course. So I love America like a brother, but also I'm defiantly British in the sense that I will remain here till the end of time, until Britain is no more. And I always describe it as being in America for me is like being in a warm shower. So everybody's lovely to me and I feel super nice. And being here is like being in a cold shower. It's hard, it's tough, it can be unfriendly at times, but there's still great Brits left here that need defending.
I feel similarly because I live in New York City, and whenever I go to Dallas, I feel that way.
Yes,
it's an amazing thing because when you go to a place like Texas, you say, "Oh, this is what real freedom feels like."
Yes,
but we don't quite have that in New York. And when you say a shower, I'm immediately put in mind of the great English actor Terry Thomas. Do you remember his catchphrase?
No, tell me.
Oh, I can't say it on the air.
Oh.
But he would say, oh, what a shower.
Oh, and I think I know where that goes.
He meant a particular kind of shower.
I know what sort of shower you mean.
Anyway, Terry Thomas, he had a split between his front teeth. Brilliant comic actor. Okay, so we're talking about everything, talking about Corona. I want to talk to you, of course, about China. I know what I think. My audience probably knows what I think. What do you think of China at this moment?
I think China is such a dark force. So having watched the videos and the footage out of Wuhan way back when, and watched the Chinese authorities welding people into their own apartments, and now watching our socialists in the UK, our Labour Party, praising the Chinese, you know, endless footage of Chinese healthcare workers being sent to save us. And, you know, for me and my personal view, China is the dark force at play across the globe at the moment.
Did you see what the head, two of the leaders of the World Health Organization said, things that were absolutely screaming Chinese propaganda? It was chilling, absolutely chilling. And it struck me that
the United States, led by Trump, ought to take away the $58 million per year that we give to them. Because if we don't have the quote, but it was genuinely shocking that they were saying things that were obviously not true and obviously Chinese propaganda. And this is the WHO.
Yes, absolutely. The World Health Organization needs to be closed down. The leader of the World Health Organization needs to be removed with immediate effect. He said early on there was no known human-to-human passing of the virus. That was Chinese stuff that he was spouting. Early days, the World Health Organization also warned against the stigma of corona, saying you're not allowed to call it Wuhan flu, saying that the stigma was worse than the virus itself. The World Health Organization needs to be got rid of or completely reformulated. U.S. funding must stop to the World Health Organization. It's deeply sinister.
I was going to say on this program, officially, we call the disease the Kung Flu Pandademic. You might want to write that down. It's really extraordinary to me, though, to see, you know, it's all the usual suspects. It's the globalist UN and it's the craven media. But supporting the Chinese narrative, and I have to say, you know, as the son of European immigrants who experienced actual communism, it's amazing that we have an elite class that at a time like this, when it is so clear that China is not transparent, that they will lie, that they will do anything to further their nationalist goals into the decades ahead, that you have liberal commentators on our networks buying this, having no sense of the wickedness of that regime.
And I think that's kind of that links to this fear that I have when I look around me and see people. I don't want to move too much because it will affect our thing, but with their necks craning up towards the state and away from themselves, it is that kind of communist / socialist thought that is that you lose all sense of self, you are paid by the state, you become an actor of the state. The state tells you what you will do, how you will manage your life, where you will eat, when you will eat, when you're allowed to walk your dog or not, whether you will buy an Easter egg or not. And it only took 2 weeks in my country for that to happen. It only took 2 weeks for people to be asking permission to buy an Easter egg.
Well, let me ask you about the spirit of people in the UK, because I would like to think, although it's less and less true, that in America, if someone at least dared to say that to me, I would tell him to sawed off. Now, you can't say that on British TV. Actually, it really, though, but in other words, I get so offended as an American that when someone dares to do that, I would give massive pushback. My concern is that more and more people don't give pushback. I would say, listen, in the 1950s in America, anyone, any Democrat, any Republican would understand these things. We've come to a place where very few people, even many conservatives, don't quite get these things.
That's right. And that somewhat explains the following I still have, even though I'm banned from everything, all media, you know, I lost everything, lost my jobs, whatever, or you lose your home as I have, or they come for your children as they have mine, or they come for your head. And so
people don't realize, Katie, because I haven't introduced you as fulsomely as I might have. You say that they will come. You can lose your house. They will come for your children or they'll come for your head. In your case, please tell my audience, most of whom don't know any of this. Let's start with the most anodyne, losing your home. Did you actually lose your home? What do you mean by that?
Yes. So just to preface, I have no sympathy for myself and I accept all that has happened to me. And I put myself out there and I accept the consequences. But the consequences in my country of trying to speak about things that I think need to be said, which are fact-based things. But in my country, fact has become a policeable event. So they came after me with litigation after litigation after litigation. They created a new law specifically for me that said I was guilty of something, even if someone only perceived that I'd hurt them or caused them harm, as in from something I'd written or said. And so I lost my family home. And as a consequence, I now own nothing at all. And actually, that's been a liberating thing, because when you have nothing, you are ultimately very free. And so that's why I'm able to still speak out when most in the UK cannot. And actually, Tommy Robinson, they're just coming for his home now, and they will get it.
It's amazing. You mentioned that they'd come after your children. You have three children. And what do you mean that they've come after your children?
Yes. So they report my children and my family to social services, which is like the obviously the government kind of patrolling service for.
You seem like an abusive mother. You're the classic abusive mother. So I'm glad that they're checking up on you. They've done it more than once.
There's context to it, which is that if you have my kind of view, strong patriotic conservative views in the UK, you are not allowed to adopt children anymore because you are seen as an actor of hate. So actually the consequence of reporting my children is more severe.
That's unbelievable. That is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, and do you mean to say that you were thinking of adopting children, or do you mean?
No, because I have sufficient with three, if I'm honest. I struggle to cope. But no, I just wouldn't want to adopt children because I have my own. But that is the truth in the UK. Somebody like me wouldn't be able to adopt someone.
That is amazing. Now, the final thing to which you so cavalierly alluded was that they came for your head. That's not a joke. Tell us about that.
No. So anybody can Google, if they want to, beheading Katie Hopkins. A couple of jihadis who didn't like me highlighting the fact that we are under attack from Islamists in the UK. And one day my country will be taken over. Not too far from now, actually. A couple of jihadis came to chop my head off. They practiced beheading me with a large knife and a dummy. That evidence was captured. And my house in the middle of the night was taken over by security forces and rigged up with alarms because the threat was imminent. Those two jihadis are now in prison and I kept my head. But yes, that is what happens in this country.
We're going to go to another break. Katie Keeps Her Head. That sounds like the title of 1930s B movie. We'll be right back.
Once there was a way to get back homeward.
Welcome back, folks, to the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Katie Hopkins, so the less I say, the better. Katie, onward. What should we discuss?
Yes, so onwards is that I say, and I say often to America, you know, my plea that I like to issue whenever I'm given the opportunity, thank you, Eric, is not to become like the UK. And I know that we have the coronavirus going on and things feel very dark right now. But what we can remember is that there is a much bigger fight at play that we are all part of and we all belong to. And my message to America is always not to become like the UK. The reason you still have your First Amendment is because of your Second. And the reason I will always take heart from America is that even at a time like now, at a time of a global pandemic, when my country is using the police to encourage neighbors to report on each other, in America, that line would still not be crossed. Because you have your Second Amendment, there is still a sense that American citizen has the right and the duty, in fact, to protect and defend themselves. And that is something very, very powerful that actually this virus has made me come to realize even more.
Well, it's an interesting thing because I live in New York City. There are such strict gun laws here that I don't have a gun that I'll admit to. Actually, I don't have any gun. But the thinking really is that when you begin to face things like this, I mean, walking around New York, as I do almost every day, I get to see these empty streets and these vast plate glass windows and shops, everything's shuttered. And I think to myself, what if enough people decided to begin looting? What if? I mean, it doesn't really take much once something like this happens to imagine that kind of thing. And I think to not have a gun at a time like that, it strikes me as positively un-American. It's the most mm-hmm. basic thing to defend oneself. And obviously in the UK, almost no one has a gun.
No one. No, absolutely not. Not unless it's in a lockbox and you're from the hunting fraternity. But I would say in New York, interestingly, the gentleman that took me to the airport when I was forced to leave on one of the last flights that I would be able to get on, he was an Uber driver, lovely gentleman. His wife had worked in the same restaurant on 52nd for 18 years, and she received an email telling her that she no longer had her job. And he was saying, of course, he couldn't get any rides or any fares because nobody was going anywhere. And he said to me, as I went to the airport, you know, when you take everything away from people, they have nothing left to lose. And his point rather was that, you know, they are getting to a point as a family without an income, with rent due, with no way of buying food. They have nothing left to lose if they need to go and take stuff. And he didn't mean it in a threatening nor an intimidating way, just in a sense of his reality. Right. And I really got it.
It seems to me that part of the problem, of course, is that the West, we have been so blessed since the Second War. We've been so prosperous that it's hard for us to conceive, A, of evil, or B, of genuinely hard times. And so we have become very, very soft and very, very amenable to people pushing us around. And when you think about what could happen, I only have to think about what happened in Germany in the 20s, when you have massive unemployment and rage at the Versailles Treaty and so on and so forth. People can be manipulated horribly by other horrible people. And we've not seen that. And so I think that one of the good things about this virus, this quarantine, is that it enables us to begin to imagine some things that previously we hadn't been able to.
I think that's right. And I think there is a kind of cultural reset going on underneath all of this. And there are some strong reminders that are being played out that are so important to us. And one of them is how much we can rely on our family and our friends. The other is the importance of our elderly and us wanting to bring them closer to protect them in some way. I think that's a cultural reset. And I think also for our young people, it's the first time in a very long time any of them have had need to look up from their iPhone. We don't talk about death normally, and people need to check that for themselves and think, I'm not normally shown this stuff. Why am I being shown it now? And be better than that.
I think that's right. We have forgotten, I think you said it earlier, that there's this thing called death, and we've been led to believe that if we obey the nanny state and do everything right, we can live forever and ever and ever. And it's a very sick utopianist view that has never gone well in history. And I do think that this is a cultural reset. I'm going to borrow that phrase with attribution. But I think the term cultural reset, I do think there are many things that will never be the same. And somehow I think that we will be better coming through this.
We will. I think people will remember what faith matters. I have faith, and because of it, I have no fear. I have faith in myself, faith in good people, and faith that we come through this. So I am fearless. If you live without faith, you live in fear. And I think part of this cultural reset will be a new found faith in all sorts of things, whatever your faith is, but you need to find it and latch onto it again.
I think I always first will talk about faith in God. And I know that that's what's so interesting is that even for people who don't specifically have faith in God, if you acknowledge the reality around us, you have faith in the right things. And it's fascinating to me that this difficult time, as you said, it's forcing people to see some things to which they were blind or which were invisible to them for whatever reason. I think we're going to go to another break. Folks, we have a final segment with the great Katie Hopkins. I think she says Hopkins, but Hopkins. Listen, it's my show. I can say it as I like. We'll be right back with Katie.
All right, Eric Metoxis.
try to.
Folks, I am still talking to Katie Hopkins, despite the terrible things she's said to me. Katie, welcome back. Listen, I have to ask you, it's tea time in England. You know, we're taping this early in the United States, but over there, are your children and your wonderful husband clamoring for tea and cake?
Yes. So what happens about now, when we finish talking shortly, is we will have tea and cakes. We actually have that. And let me tell you what we've got. So we'll have cups of tea, and I have my tea with milk. My husband has strange tea that he makes in a small pot for himself. I don't know what that's about. I think it's something to do with being creative. And then we have little chocolate buns that my mother made us with Maltesers. You know, those little chocolate thing? Okay, a little sweetie on top of each one of them. And then we have salted caramel bun loaf. But my children are very naughty. And so they go into my cupboard and they pull off the sweeties from on top of the cakes. And so Yeah, very naughty, and they pull off the sweeties before they eat the cake.
Have you ever thought that the word naughty has the etymology to the word naught, meaning nothing?
I'm going to use that going forward.
Have you not thought of that?
No, but I'm going to use it extensively.
I mean, I love it. Well, I because I'm a writer, I think of etymology, and it struck me at some point that the word naughty, you know, what does it mean to be naughty, naughty? It naught means nothing. So in a sense, it just means to be bad. But I love the fact that it has an etymological link, and I wanted to waste your time by sharing that with you, Katie. So seriously, though, if you eat all of these wonderful things now at this late hour in the afternoon, do you have any significant supper later on? When do you eat your boiled beef?
That comes later. So we have to do corned beef and Spam, obviously, as our dinner time treats because we're British. And then we have to go and sit in the bomb shelter until this all passes, which actually is quite tempting at the moment, isn't it?
You know, I have to say that a very, very, very dear old friend of mine, Sally Lloyd Jones, who now lives here in New York, but obviously from her surname, you can tell she's not from here originally. She is now a famous writer, and she's been friends. We've been friends for 30 years. But the other day we were emailing, and she said, "This coronavirus, you know, lockdown, whatever." She says it's like our Blitz. In other words, it's this absolutely strange, unprecedented time, and we don't know how long it will last. We don't know how we will get through it quite. And of course, it's really nothing like having incendiary bombs dropped on the top of your head or on the top of St. Paul's. But it has similarities for our generation. We've never been through anything quite like it.
We haven't. And the disappointing thing, I suppose, is unlike the Blitz, where there was this kind of sense of the enemy outside. In this sense, Corona, we've almost caved before we even began. We caved early and fast because that was the recommendation, but it means that we shut everything. We stopped everything. Everything that's joyous that we do, we stopped and we ceased. And so that's why the Blitz analogy only carries us so far. There was something triumphant about the Blitz. And I fear that actually we come out the back of Corona, not triumphant, but actually quite wounded by the whole experience.
I think I will be so bold as to differ with you at least slightly, because I think two things. I really do think that the leadership that we currently have has struck the right tone. I think that Trump has been realistic. At the same time, he's indefatigably positive and hopeful. And that's the kind of leader we need. Obviously, yeah. Churchill was that kind of a leader. So I never thought I would see Trump as being Churchillian, but there have been moments in some of these press conferences where I thought he's risen to the level of being called Churchillian, because it is very easy not to be positive when things get dark. And Churchill's ability to do that, obviously, he needed a population that was open to that kind of thinking. But I think most Americans are listening to Trump's positiveness. And so I somehow think that his political fortunes and America in general will come out of this. But I know what you're saying. What you're saying is quite right. How is Boris Johnson doing as a leader in this? I know that he's been stricken with this virus.
Yeah, so that's slightly, and I'm not laughing at him having Corona. It's just so typical that lovely Boris ends up contracting this very thing. But he's still leading. I think he's absolutely done something transformational, which is he was always criticized before for being the buffoon, for playing the fool, for being the joker in the room. And he changed on a heel turn and became very serious, very confident in his leadership and very clear messaging repeated and over and over very simply. So actually that's been very lovely to see with Boris Johnson, and his numbers in terms of people supporting the line that he's taken on this are fantastic. So that's been a really brilliant thing. And also I think what's been joyous, if I may, is that Corona, whilst it's a terribly difficult time for everybody, it has removed a bit of the nonsense. So I haven't heard much about Greta Thunberg. I haven't heard much about the climate. The LGBTQ RSPB agenda has more or less disappeared. Anybody with an issue, we haven't heard much from them. So that's been quite joyous.
It's funny you say that, because you're quite right. When you said, since I'm obsessed with words, when you said on a heel turn, it just struck me that we, you know what we would say in the United States? You know what we would say?
On a dime.
On a dime. But you.
Oh my God, it's on a dime.
But you don't have dimes in your country. And so you can't say.
Let me tell you something even nicer is that I can, when I say it, heel turn, I can feel it because I went through Sandhurst. And one of the things we had to be really good at was heel turns. So I could do you, if you want me to, I can do you a heel turn.
Please don't. Please don't. This is a family show. We can't have you doing things like that. This is, but I like the way you say heel turn. You don't say heel turn. You say heel turn.
Oh, yeah. Heel turn. It's like sharp. It's much sharper than a dime. Much
heel turn.
Yeah. A dime is a circular thing, whereas a heel turn is a 90-degree angle at speed.
Right.
Yeah, with a highly polished boot. So, you know, much better than anything American. Much better.
I'm so sorry we have to go to a break, but we're going to be back with one more segment, because you've been good, audience. We're going to be back with Katie Hopkins. Don't go away. Folks, final segment with the great Katie Hopkins. Now, Katie, the last time we were together, you were in New York, and I was able to reach over and touch your head. You let me feel the place where you're missing a large part of your skull, and I feel sort of sad that I can't do that right now.
Oh, do you want to try and do it across the air?
I'm afraid my screen wouldn't handle it, but that's no joke. We're not going to talk about that right now. You talked about epilepsy when we were last together. It makes me very sad, though, that we missed being able to be in the studio together, to break bread together, as it were.
I know, but you know, strange things. People come up to me wherever I am in America when I'm on the road, and they say, I heard you on Eric's show. And then they asked to feel my head. So because of you, there's a nation of head feelers out there, because they know about my brain being out because they listen to you.
I could have never dreamt that this show had that kind of reach, I guess, pun intended, maybe. Well, Katie, just a few minutes left. So then what then shall we think of this time? We don't know when this ends, but we know where we are now.
Yes. And the one thing I wanted to say to you and your team and your listeners is how important it is what you do and how you deliver your message. Because when I travel about America, and I wasn't joking, people have said to me that they listen to you and you help see their way through for them. You guys give them hope in what you do, that your message is really important. And actually, I think that's why I got in touch with you last time when I was coming to see you, because I wanted you to know that what you do matters to America, and that's as an outsider. And the second thing was about this idea of faith and us having faith and this cultural reset that we're going through. There is a purpose to this. You know, many people out there may disagree with me or not. That's fine. But for many of us, we know that we're part of something much bigger. We know we're here for a reason, even on a bad day when nasty things happen. And actually, if this is part of a bigger plan, then this cultural reset is necessary. And if it means that after this, we hold our older people closer and they don't go to a home, they come live with us. Or if it means that after this, we find new faith, whether that's in religion or some other faith, that will be the message from this. And after this time has passed, as it surely will, that's where we will find ourselves. And the analogy, if I may, just briefly, I spend a lot of time in airports because my family don't like me and I'm a tramp. No, I just travel a lot. And in airports, they have these travelators, you know, the floor that goes along. In French, yes, they say tapis roulant, which means a moving carpet. So if you're on the tapis roulant of life, even if you don't know what you're doing or what's going to happen, as long as you're on the travelator, you keep moving forwards. And so that's my kind of big plea to Americans right now and Trump supporters and good patriots is you're on the moving carpet. You're on the travelator at the airport. We are going somewhere and we're going forwards. And eventually we'll get off this and there'll be a cultural reset and that will be the win.
It's wonderful to to hear you say these things. I really wanted to end the program on a bummer and we've failed utterly because, Katie, you've been so positive. When you talk about having faith and purpose, someday when we're having dinner, I will explain to you how the very idea of our having purpose in the way that you've put it leads inevitably, inexorably to the God of the universe. But we don't have time now. We're out of time. Katie, we love you. We are grateful to you for taking this time. We're just thrilled. We can't wait till we see you in person. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Eric, and to your team.